Welcome to the Dear Love Joy podcast special. Today it is a special one because I've got Simon Rimmer in my kitchen.
Hey.
And Karen Clifton.
Hey.
And we're going to be talking all about Strictly with them. But this is really kind of weird doing this introduction because they're actually sitting looking at us as we're doing the introduction. But we're having, it's going to be special today because I've got Simon round. It's a Sunday. It's after the show. That's when he could do it. So we decided, you know, when I normally give people gifts, the gift is I've bought some meat and we're cooking it. But so far I've managed to get Simon cooking most of the dinner and it's smelling pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah, he was teaching me how to... seal it and, you know, bits and pieces like that.
So today we're going to be talking all about Strictly, and then I think I'm going to interview Simon about his career as well, and possibly about Sunday Brunch, which should be interesting because I work on the show. So it'd be nice to hear his take on it. Anything you want to know about Strictly, Mark?
Well, not Strictly, Sunday Brunch. I'm very interested to know what he thinks about his co-presenter.
Good looking guy, apparently. Well, popular chap.
I've heard he's quite difficult.
Yeah, arrogant. All right, let's get on with this. Cue the music.
This is just a guide to modern life. Modern life is hard to get just right. It can frustrate you and annoy. And if it does, write into Dear Love Joy.
Welcome to my kitchen, Karen and Simon. How are you both?
Very good, thank you.
Very good.
What do you think of my kitchen, Karen?
I love it.
Good. What do you think of the oven? Because of the cooker? Because Simon made me choose that.
I'm very envious of your kitchen, actually. I want to cook in it.
It's all right,
can
isn't
I?
It?
Can yeah, I sure. do some pancakes? I well, see now. That you're really, you would really like to clean it as well.
No, I just got one of those scrapey things, and I like scraping off. This isn't very good podcasting, because people can't see what we're talking about. Yeah, you've also brought your dog here, Betty. How's Betty?
Betty is very comfortable right now.
Good.
She's a professional vacuum cleaner.
Okay, so Karen, I like to think of Karen as the Yoko Ono of Sunday morning TV shows. You've stolen my man from me for a while, but I've got him back now. Now you've been knocked out. All right, let's start at the beginning because we want to talk about a bit about Strictly because it's good fun. What did you both think of each other when you got each other? Let's start with you, Simon.
Well, when I agreed to do Strictly, then one of the first people I told was my sister Jane, yeah. And she said, "You'll get Karen as a partner." That was back in April. And so right the way through, I thought, right, well, my sister's a massive Strictly fan. That's kind of got to be the answer. And then when you start...
Sorry, why did she say you're going to get Karen?
I don't know. I've asked her loads of times. She said, I just knew that she'd be the best person for you to be with.
Right.
Because she's quite cool. She's a grown up and she seemed to have fun with all of her co-dancers. And then when you start Strictly, you go to Roehampton and you do... group dance, and then you get to kind of, you know, you get to dance with everybody and they get to see you get to see them. We had one little bit when we danced together and we just used to have a proper laugh every time we did it. And so I genuinely thought at that point, so what my sister said, I think she's right, I'd really hope I get Karen.
You did actually tell me that as well.
Yeah.
Before you were, and he was very excited. What did you think when you got Simon?
Well, I mean, first of all, I had no idea, you know, I guess... When you're in Roehampton and you meet all the celebrities, you start kind of going, oh, he's a nice person. Or obviously, because you have to spend so much time with them. And you just really want someone who you're going to get along with. And when they announced my name, Dancing with Simon, I was actually really excited because we had a little bit of a dance together a couple of days prior to that. And I really enjoyed the fact that he was just fun. And I like people that are fun that I can be myself with and that are not scared of how crazy I get sometimes and and how intense I can be as well. So, I mean, I think it has to be a little bit of both.
So how does the process work then from the dancer's point of view? Do you get told every season that you're back in the show or do they sign you up for years in advance?
Well, yeah, they tell you a couple of months in advance. Sometimes, I mean, back in the day, it used to be right before the show started, like a month before. So you almost had to leave the schedule open. But nowadays, they're telling us a couple of months prior to that. And, you know, obviously, you always want to go back to, you know, to doing Strictly.
Did you know who Simon was before you met him?
Negative. I don't watch TV, though.
I would laugh at that, but that means she obviously has never watched our show, Simon, either.
Well, so. It's yeah. funny because I probably turned to it, but I don't really watch morning TV because I usually like to be out and about at that time. So, I mean, I don't really watch TV as much.
I would have lied then if I'd been hit, wouldn't you?
I'm actually finding the interview quite uncomfortable now.
I feel a little bit of squirmy in my seat.
But actually, when he was announced as one of the celebrities, I started watching the show because we all do our little research.
And what do you think of it?
What, your show?
Yeah.
I love it.
Oh, phew. and when you say normally on a Sunday morning you're out and about doing stuff, does that mean normally on a Sunday morning you're hungover? Is that what that really means?
Yes.
So tell us about what happens then. Once you've assigned each other, how does it work then? You're thrown together. How does a week work at Strictly?
Well, I mean, you get... for example, for the first dance, let's say we did the Paso Doble, and the first day that we, you know, I get the music and I get the concept, and then I go in pretty much with a routine set. Obviously, I had been watching him for the past couple of days. Once we get paired up, we've been given the chance to see how they move, but also on that first day specifically.
Because we do a group routine with the professionals, so you're watching him move then.
Yes. Okay. So you're watching everybody and see, you know, if they can walk on their right foot or their left foot when
you tell them to. You know, from productions, they give you guidance to say, you know, if you get me, for example, go, he's actually got no experience. I mean, no, you can obviously tell, but in advance of it, you get a bit
No, not really. I mean, some of them you know right away, but you know, some of you guys, you just do your job. You know, I can see whether you can get a step right away or not. I can see if you can dance from the first single step that you take.
Okay, so first impressions of Simon were?
He can't dance.
Oh, guys, awkward again.
No, but you know what?
We might have to put a parental warning on this one.
But you know what? It was funny because it's not about the actual steps. It's how you can... I would always tell him this. Like, he was very good at picking up the steps. It's how you connect them, how you gel the steps, and how everything flows. And it's all the technical aspects of it and when to be more forceful or more soft with this, with certain steps. So, I mean, there's a lot that goes into one single basic step that you do that it looks easy when we do it.
I've got a bit of insider knowledge on this because I know you, Karen, and I know Simon. And so what you have to do as the pro is you have to take the ingredients you've got. And then I'm using a metaphor here, cooking metaphor, because it's Simon. You take the ingredients and then you produce the dish. So you can see that Simon is, am I right in saying, stop me if I'm wrong, but he's not the most natural dancer, but he can pick up and learn the steps, but he's going to be entertaining.
No, absolutely. Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's like I have to see what I need to bring out of him and what's going to make him stand out from all the other celebrities, because everybody has something. And it's this thing that, you know, if you're not the best dancer, you're not the one that's going to be the comedy one, then you're in that gray area, which you have to produce. You have to improve every week. But you also have to seem like you're actually naturally enjoying it. And that's what I found with Simon. That it was this thing that, you know, he'd never danced before, and it's not like he was a performer right off the bat, but it was one of these things that he grew into it, and that's what, you know, what you want to teach and what you want the public to see.
Is that how you feel, Simon?
Yeah, I think that when you first start, one of the things you're very, very conscious of as any human being is you don't really want to make a fool of yourself. I'm quite happy to not look cool, I'm not bothered by that. You know, you and I for 10 years we've made ourselves look stupid every morning.
I always thought I looked cool though.
You maybe need to watch back some of our shows.
Really?
And so you have that whole thing where one, the thing that very quickly happens is you realise that the person that you're dancing with, or rather from Karen's point of view, that you have somebody who is an amazing teacher, that she kind of got me straight away. Like you said, you know, I'm not a natural dancer, very, very limited ability, but she kind of got a way of kind of getting me to kind of learn things. The hard bit then is going, right, okay, look, you've kind of got the steps, now you have to create a level of performance. And that's really hard, because you think, I don't feel comfortable doing this, because performance almost seems to be where you're going, hey, listen, I'm happy doing this, but I'm rubbish. And you think, that seems alien, and that's a big, big stepping stone. I think it took probably, certainly the first dance, I don't think I was able to do that at all. Maybe slightly more with the second one when we did the waltz. And then from that point, then you trust her implicitly to go, right, Let's do it. Let's just have fun on this.
I thought the real moment that I noticed that was when you were doing the samba. Was it the samba where you were wearing the... And there's that amazing picture of me when I've come down to watch you. and I was worried about that, what you would think about it, because I'm laughing so much. But I think what was great about that, knowing you so well, having worked with you for 10 years, the idea that Karen's got you out of your shell that far, that you're doing those... Mm. I mean, I think they were supposed to be sexy, but I'm not sure.
but you know what's the hardest thing is that people find it really easy for, you know, you say, you know, just have fun. But it's really hard to have fun when you're thinking about so many things that you have to do. Yeah. And I think in that samba, and the fact that, I mean, we rehearsed until he literally couldn't walk. Yeah. And it was this thing that you have to get the steps so muscle memorized that you forget and it almost becomes autopilot. And then that's when you turn on that part of your brain that goes, okay, I'm going to have fun with it now because I know everything.
That was the first dance, definitely, when, you know, I felt that I actually knew the dance rather than remembering steps.
Yeah.
I think that was, and you're right, that's when you can start performing with a small P.
You worked hard, didn't you? Yeah. He really worked hard.
Did. Yeah, but I loved it. And the thing is, I sort of said at the start, no one would work harder, no one would have more fun. And coming out of that's exactly what happened. You know, we laughed so much.
I laughed every single day.
Do you know what? That was the thing Simon told me. And when I realized you were a cool person as well, because Simon said, Karen is laughing so much at my samba. And I thought that was kind of nice, rather than you patronizing him, you were going, this looks ridiculous. You know? but then when it happened, I've got to tell you this, because I told Simon at the time, I don't know whether you took it in, because I came down to that show to watch, and people stand up. Sometimes they just stand up because they feel like they should. And then sometimes they stand up because they think they were just entertained. So you'd get Alexandra Burke or Aston, and they've done an amazing dance. People go, oh my God, that's amazing. When you two did that, everyone was up on their feet because it was just amazing. It was really entertaining. And I think people loved it for that.
No, I mean, I love when people get up as well.
Yeah.
but it does feel nice. And you don't want it to be... You know, you go out there, especially with these guys that, you know, are working so hard. And because it is alien to them. I mean, obviously for me, it just comes naturally because this is what I do. But like, I can't do what Simon does in the kitchen as naturally as he does.
Yeah.
But and it's one of these things that he's, you know, he just went out there and just did it and just performed and danced. And again, those little steps, as simple as they were, I mean, they had their intricate timings and levels of difficulty, but it is very intense when you go out there.
What I find amazing is I came down the first time, and I'd watched it on TV because, you know, Simon and I have to, because we do the show on the Sunday just to talk about it, but not really engaged in it at all. And I came down to watch Simon the first time. I sat next to his wife, and both of us were so nervous to begin with for Simon. And then the atmosphere there, you don't get it on TV. I wish they could somehow make it happen on TV, but the nerves of all the contestants and the atmosphere, it was so exciting. I was absolutely buzzing, wasn't I? And then I came in the next day and I went to Simon, I just don't know how you're going to come down from that. Because it's such an exciting environment to be in. It's like a sporting environment, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I said to you, I have never, in all the years I've known you, I've never known you so excited about anything that we've been to. Yeah, you know, I've been to lots and lots of events.
I hate going to events, Simon. I hate them. You know I do. But Simon and I are very different. We go to these award ceremony things. Simon loves it. He loves all the small talk and does all that. I sit there going, oh, I just want to go home. I want to run away from it. I just find it all a bit dull. But I was really excited at Strictly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it is an amazing feeling. I mean, the first time, the first dance, when I'm standing on that platform where I did the Paso Doble, and they say, "I'm dancing the Paso Doble, Simon Rimmer and Karen Clifton," and you cannot hear anything other than your heart because you are terrified.
Yeah, what was the first one I watched you do though? I came down. You did do "You'll Never Walk Alone."
Yeah,
was that your second dance?
Yeah, second dance.
Because I was standing there, sitting there, watching you, and I thought you're actually not breathing. I was watching you, thinking because I know you so well. You're so nervous. I was worried that you were actually going to be able to dance. I know it had bigger connotations because the song you were dancing to and everything, but you looked terrified.
Yeah, I mean, I was. And breathing, it's funny because that's the thing that you said to me right the way through. Breathe. And again, coming back to the samba, which is the first time when I felt like I actually knew the dance rather than the steps, it's probably also the first time I breathed for the entire 90 seconds.
But it's funny because whenever he would get really nervous, I can... Yeah. When I was looking at him, he was looking at me, but he wasn't. And like his breathing would go, you would go into this like pretty intense breathing, and I tell him, relax, just relax. Like, I'm here to help you. You can just look at me and you'll know exactly what you need to do. But it is intense. It's something that you can't really, only if you're on that dance floor with that little red light that says live and 12 million people are tuning in. When you're in that moment and that band is playing and those judges are watching you and everybody else around the country is watching you, you're going to be very... I mean, I get nervous. I completely get nervous all the time. But I can just imagine these
guys...
So
how do you deal with his nerves when he did it?
I ignore them. No, I always said to him, just relax, everything's going to be fine. Like, I stayed very, very calm, even though I'm always very nervous, regardless whether it's dancing with my celebrity or doing my own thing as well. But I always keep very calm.
There's a level of nerves, and I always think it's doing the show with Simon when we're live on TV, when people lose it, sometimes you can see them actually leave their body, you know, and they're not there anymore, and you have to just talk to them until they come back. Did you ever get that far, Simon? Were you?
I think quite a few times, but I think the one thing that Karen discovered about me was one of the things that actually calmed me was for me to be almost exhausted before we started the dance.
Right.
So that rather than having so much kind of pumped up energy, she would make me seriously kind of do like 200 press-ups and just be absolutely exhausted.
You do 200 press-ups? He's just one throwing that in there.
But that was the thing, wasn't it? You should make me be absolutely exhausted so that you sort of go, right, okay, I've actually just got to kind of get my energy to actually perform this rather than have so much energy so you overperform.
Where exactly are you doing these press-ups?
In my head.
let's talk about match day then, Saturday. What happens when you turn up? What happens? What's the whole day entail? Because you seem to be putting your makeup on at about 9 o'clock in the morning or something.
Yeah, I mean, for us, you do your first run-through. Well, actually, it starts Friday, but on Saturday, on show day, you go in and you do your run-through with the band and obviously camera shots, etc., camera blocking the whole dance. And you only get two runs in which you want to make sure that everything's set and that, you know, everything that was rehearsed and needs to be there. Sometimes you don't really like to change anything unless it's really not working. And it's that day that you have to be on your game. You have to be on your game. And then we do a dress run, in which this is when you feel you get your costume and you have your makeup on, etc. How are you gonna be on that night? And again, that affects you as well, because once you put a costume on, you're already going into a character, in which usually when you're just in your rehearsal clothing, you're just being yourself. But when they dress you up, you already feel like you're going into this character, and that helps enhance the dance as well.
It's really funny because I'm sort of very calm about kind of Strictly now that I'm through it. But just talking through what we do on a Saturday, I can feel tension.
Really?
I really can. Just that memory is there. Of that
I loved watching. I loved watching you. I felt like I've been through it with you, actually. Yeah, bizarrely. Yeah. And I feel watching you tense, you're nervous, and then the elation when you got through and you used to text me and tell me what was going on and stuff. Was it a tough decision to go into it? I've actually not asked you this before. Was it a tough decision or did you just go yes immediately?
Well, you know, you and I know plenty of people who've done it in the past, and everyone I know who's done it has said, if ever you get the chance to do it, don't turn it down, because it's going to be one of the most positive experiences of your life. And so I said yes.
Yeah, they say
away.
That, but we're still... But we're... How do I say this without being... People say that, but you don't necessarily go, yeah, I'm going to do it, do you? It's a big decision to do.
For me, it was easy. I just felt
was
that,
it?
Yeah, it really, really was. When they sort of offered it to me, I thought, you know what, I'm going to do it. I just felt that, I don't know, I'm 54, outside of my comfort zone. I'm not afraid of making a fool of myself. I knew that I'd work hard. And also, you kind of do that thing, so what's the worst that can happen? The worst that can happen is you go out first and you don't do very well. For a few people go, oh, you went out first. That's the absolute worst that can happen. So from that point of view, you go, well, if that's it, then so be it. So it was easy. Yeah, and also, I knew I had a finite lifespan in it, Tim. You know, I was fairly large outsider to win the glitter ball.
Karen's laughing a lot.
Karen spends a lot of her time laughing.
Karen,
at
do you want the person who's going to win it? Because you've had some competitors, haven't you? Mark Wright was in there to win it.
Mark Wright, yeah, he made the final. I had Nikki Byrne who made a quarterfinal actually. You know what? I guess yeah, everybody wants to win. Don't get me wrong. Everybody wants to do good. Everybody wants to be known as the best pro that's doing all the amazing routines and getting the tens and you know. But at the same time, it's about how you make your celebrity look, that you're putting them first and that they have an amazing experience, because yeah. it's about the experience and not about actually winning it. Obviously, winning it would be fantastic.
Sorry, Karen.
I know. It's okay.
Calm down, Simon.
It's okay. I still like you. But yeah, I mean, it's not the first thing that I think about when I get a partner. I don't go, oh, I'm not going to win it now. You know, you never know. It's about making sure that you entertain the public.
How quickly is it before you get a partnership together? How do you have to do that instantly?
What do you mean? Like,
get the partnership, you two working together. How long did it take to do?
Well, instantly, definitely.
Does that happen with all your partners?
Yeah, well,
all right, let's change it. Are there dancers, pro dancers, who dance with their celebrities and they're not getting on?
Yes.
Okay.
All the time.
So it's important for you as the pro dancer to massage the ego of the celebrity or to befriend them. Otherwise, you can't do it, right?
No, absolutely. And I mean, because you have to gain their trust, and I like doing my research, and I like making sure that we become friends, because it'll be easier for me to teach you, and it'll be easier for me as a female to tell you, no, you can't do that, or to be strong with you. So it's one of these things that obviously, you know, I am very small and tiny, you know, so, but I am like a Rottweiler when I'm in that studio. And it's one of these things that...
Or just walking down the street, really.
No, but it's this thing that you have to make sure that your celebrity trusts you 100%. And then obviously when you go on that dance floor and the judges say a couple of things here and there and their confidence goes down, you have to pick them up and you have to make sure that you're holding them. I mean, it's so, as physically as it is, it's very psychological and emotional for, you know, for someone to go into Strictly.
Whose idea was it to eat chicken? out of the whole of the Strictly series, it's my favorite bit watching you eat chicken.
You know, I
was laughing so much. That picture I've got of you two is amazing.
Brilliant.
I originally wanted food. I mean, I obviously love food. I'm pretty sure people are sick and tired of me saying this, of hearing me say that I love food, but I do. And I'm not going to get tired of saying it. It was a banquet. So I was like, yeah, why can't I get chicken? Can I get some chicken? And they got me chicken. And then at the end, I was starving. I'm not kidding. I didn't do this because I was trying to be a clown or anything, even though I am a big clown, but I was actually starving. Because before the dance, I don't actually eat. You know, 2 or 3 hours before I perform, I don't eat. So I was really hungry, and I just took too big of a bite.
Yeah, but what was funny about it is you're both being criticized a lot for that dance. And so you're both having to have your face and sincere face on looking at the judges whilst you've got a mouthful of chicken. It's just that. It was funny, and it just didn't go away, did it?
Chewing. So we're trying to kind of desperately kind of chew the chicken and kind of swallow it so we can carry on. And the judges were being particularly kind of, I don't know, critical, shall we say. So then we almost changed from kind of trying to chew the chicken to then kind of it turned into it being like chewing gum like we were teenagers with our arms around each other going like, yeah, whatever.
Can't get you on without talking about the thing they do every year, the Strictly Curse. So when you're dancing with someone who's so hot, is it hard to keep your hands off Simon, Karen?
I mean, absolutely. It's
why is everybody laughing?
I couldn't resist myself.
There you go. Right, Karen, we can detect an accent there. Can we find out a bit about you?
No.
What
do you want to know?
Where are you from? Because we say Venezuela, and yet that's an American accent.
Well, I was born in Valencia, Venezuela, and I was raised in New York since the age of 8.
Okay, so do you see yourself as American now?
Yeah. I'm a Latina. I speak Spanish. You know, yo te puedo hablar en español si quieres, pero I'm not gonna do that because you can't understand me. Do you speak Spanish? ¿Te hablas español?
Oh, that's filthy.
You want to learn Spanish?
Yeah.
Anyways,
we've only got an hour.
Well, anyways, yeah. So I moved to New York with my parents when I was 8, and I lived in the Bronx I lived in Brooklyn and I lived in Queens. So, I mean, I pretty much lived everywhere. And that's where I started dancing as well.
All right. So tell us about dancing. How did you, because you weren't trained as a ballroom dancer.
No. I started out as in a school program, actually. And I always say that dance found me because I was in, you know, I didn't speak English and I didn't really have friends. And there was this program in my school in the Bronx that they were trying to see how our arts, specifically dance, helped kids to, you know, with their confidence and kind of just putting them out there in society. And, mainly for me, it was because I needed to make friends and I needed to learn the language. But so from there, I started out with, it was a contemporary and then African dance. And then when I was 19, that's when I started ballroom dancing.
How long did it take you before you realized you had a talent for it?
For dance?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, what I liked was that I, you know, I had a very difficult childhood. So what I liked was that I would stay after school, and that was something that distracted me. And then suddenly it became something that I started really loving. And I think I was good. I don't know.
If you say you specialize in one sort of dance, what would it be?
I don't like pigeonholing myself. I don't like saying one specific. I'm broad. I'm abroad. I literally do a little bit of everything, and I think that's what creates something new, and it doesn't keep you dull, I guess.
What does it feel like to dance well?
hey, we're getting deep.
Yeah, but I think it's really weird because, like, I imagine, Simon, you weren't the biggest dancer in nightclubs. No. Where I actually used to have to dance when I DJed. I used to DJ with this girl, and when one of us was DJing, the other one had to stand. We were on a slight platform, so we had to dance. So it's quite an weird thing to do, really. Mark would definitely not dance. Have you danced in your life, Mark? No. So, but when you do actually dance and it feels good, you got the music, you got the feeling, it feels all right. What's it like to dance at the level you dance at?
Well, I mean, it's the connection that you have and the choreography that you have and the music. It's funny because I've never really I don't really think about how I feel when I dance. It's just emotional. For me, I when I dance, it's not just about how high I can kick my leg. I have to have some kind of story behind it that will make me feel something. I always like to feel a bit heavy and a bit, regardless if it's something happy or anything, but for me, it's more of an emotional kind of thing that I like to experience. And I like, so I mean, for me, it's a bit deeper because I take everything from past experiences or relationships or anything like that. So it does feel very intense.
So when you're dancing, you're doing learning the steps. Then when you're performing, you're putting emotions into it.
Absolutely. I mean, and that's one of the things that I teach as well. When you're first in the studio, you're learning your steps and you're learning your counts and you're learning the directions. And then after that, that's when you put in, you know, the story and you put in, you know, the character and the performance aspect of it, which will connect everything and make it even stronger.
So it's really interesting because when we were dancing together, then obviously that role is about kind of you looking after me. And then when I watch Karen dance with the other pro dancers, it is completely different. You know, I went to watch last night, and then watching you do a routine with Pasha and seeing the way that you are reacting, I completely and utterly see that, you know, there's a very, very different connection. That connection is about your journey rather than kind of like, you know, when you dance with me. I'm not saying that doesn't happen as well, but it is very different, and you do get to see that.
What does it feel like to dance, Simon?
Do you know what? I really, really loved it. You know, I think that from the starting point of having no knowledge to this point now of having an incredibly tiny amount of knowledge. But the reason I really, really loved doing it was 100% down to Karen.
What was your best dance?
Charleston.
Charleston. All right. So that's where you got injured.
Yeah.
On the dance off. But you're right. So you're in the Charleston and you're nailing it. And the music's there. What did you dance? What was the music? I can't remember.
Fiddle as a Fiddle.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So you've got the music, you've got the outfit. What does that moment feel like when you pull it off and you dance well? What does it feel
brilliant.
Like?
Because that was the first dance, I think, because we'd had the Samba the week before and we'd had fun.
Yeah.
So I think we had more confidence in the Charleston. Well, I had more confidence in the Charleston that week. So I think that we had a really good week rehearsing. And then when we were doing it, and there's a bit when we come down the stairs, and then there's a bit where we tap the bows from the fiddle, and then we do this kind of little leg movement. And I got to that point where I thought, I am nailing this in my own way. You know, I'm never going to be an astronaut, but I thought, this is brilliant. And I knew that, because obviously she senses what I'm doing right or wrong. And I could see you go, this is happening. And then we had this crazy, ridiculous slapstick bit at the end that we just loved. And that feeling, I suppose, Tim, it's equating to kind of like, you know, playing really well in a football match. It has that exact
scoring
kind of analogy.
Scoring a goal.
Yeah.
Wheeling away.
Yeah. Yes. It's absolutely that.
Okay. So that amazing. What happened straight after then? You just sort of kind of hugged each other, didn't you? We've done it. It's actually like scoring a goal analogy, isn't it?
Yeah. It was brilliant. So. I mean, the thing is as well, because also the thing that happens is that I actually couldn't care less what the judges said to me. That's an absolute fact. All I cared about was Karen happy with what we did. And at the end of that, when she hugged me and said, yeah, she was kind of screaming, that's the best feeling I had in the whole of Strictly, because I knew that you were kind of dead proud of what we'd done. And that is the best moment. It's sending shivers down my spine now, because that is the best moment, because she was proud of what we'd done.
Yeah. How did you get your job in Strictly?
Well, I was touring with a company called Burn the Floor, and I was on a world tour, and Kevin, obviously he's from here, my husband, he's from here, and we wanted to pretty much take the next step as performers, and we had been asked to audition for Dancing with the Stars in the US, but we didn't really like LA, and then we decided to audition for Strictly Come Dancing, and we were on tour, and we had a Skype session. Actually, we had an interview through Skype.
Wow.
Because we were, I don't know, in Ohio or somewhere, you know, crazy. But I got the job first, and then the year
after.
Sorry,
did you dance on Skype?
No, it was just an interview. Right. It was just an interview. They wanted to see how you kind of interacted, and they asked us if one of us got the job and the other one didn't, if we would be okay with that, because we were a couple back then. And we were like, of course, you know, at least, you know, if one of us gets in, then it's easier to get the other person in as well.
And did they ask you questions about teaching? Because had you been teaching dance up until then?
Yeah, I'd been teaching dance in a studio in New Jersey, and, you know, I taught salsa, I taught groups of people, you know, married couples. I used to and it's one of these things that it's funny, because I taught for a while. I mean, and all of us, we all teach, and that's why it's really helpful when you come in too strictly and you do this job. But it was one of those things that I didn't want to continue teaching in a studio. I wanted to perform, and funny enough, here I get to teach and I get to perform, so I get best of both worlds.
How many different types of the ballroom are there on Strictly?
There's five ballroom dances, right, and then five Latin dances, and then you have the other. Then you have Argentine tango.
That's
you
my favorite.
Charleston,
is that the one with
salsa,
the legs going all over the
place?
Yeah.
So there's 13 dances that you do overall, and then.
So actually, do you know them all? Did you know them all?
Well, you learn all of them. You learn all of them, but. For example, I used to compete in Latin dancing, so that was where I was more prominent in. And then obviously you learn, you know, the basic steps in ballroom, for example, because you have to teach. You have to be an all-rounder. And then when it comes to salsa, I was a world mambo champion in 2008, if you Ooh. Want to look it up. Yeah, so world mambo champion. And Charleston, it was one of those things that I've always loved, Charleston.
Right.
And it's not something that they usually teach, but one of the things that I loved.
And how... You're reliant on a partner when you're doing ballroom dancing at pro level.
Yeah.
How hard is it to find the partner to when you do that? What did you win? World champion.
World Mambo champion.
Is that
yeah.
with a partner?
Yeah, that where was with a partner.
So where did you find the partner?
Well, I used to be married before to my
right.
To
so dance. And does that help?
Well, I mean, it's just obviously, as you can see, most couples that are on Strictly or dancing together are married. So my first husband, I danced with him. And I won the World Mambo Championship with him. And then, sadly, we got divorced.
Okay. What's it like being a pro dancer then? So if you're not got Strictly, when you're not doing Strictly, what do you then go on? You're dancing with Kevin. You've got your own tour.
Yeah.
What happens on that?
Well, for example, we have the Strictly Tour that happens in January through February.
Yeah.
Then after that, they have Strictly Cruises. where you go in and you're on board for 5-6 days and you do a couple of performances.
Oh, you teach a couple of classes.
No.
It's amazing. It really, really is amazing. And then, yeah, you do a lot of gigs. And then this year, it'll be our second tour that starts in May, the Kevin and Karen tour.
And what happens there? What
well, happens? We have a 13-piece band. We have two singers. We have a cast of dancers, six other dancers with us. The first tour that we did, we told our love story, our life story, pretty much how we met and how we fell in love. And now this year, we're still working on what we're going to do.
You told your story through dance.
Yes.
Oh.
Well, and the great thing
we should do
that.
We should do a Sunday morning. we should do the 3 hours.
Well,
told
I like
dance.
To think your UK hip hop is in fact your life story.
Ah, I've got a good few dances. I could teach you some, Karen. There's only a few dances you need. Hip hop, Charleston, and backwards dancing. If you got those three in your locker,
perfect.
Then you're fine, as most men will tell you.
He's not actually joking.
I'm not joking.
No, I know. I could see that. I could see it in your eyes.
I have got two dances on YouTube, hip hop, and me dancing to the Jackson 5, which have got quite a substantial amount of views. You know.
Would you ever do Strictly?
Would I ever do Strictly? Do you know what I would have always said? I'd have always said I don't know. But coming down and watching Simon do it, the excitement of the Saturday night was just, I just thought it was amazing. I really, honestly, I genuinely did, as Simon will tell you. I came down and just went, wow, it's so exciting. All the bits around it, I'm not so sure, but the actual dancing is fantastic. There's a lot of training, isn't there? There's a lot of training.
Yes.
I do like training though. So is it a good life being a pro dancer?
Yeah, I mean, it's great. You know, it's a job that, you know, you've made it. In a way, it's very obviously the profile that you get and how you use it to your advantage. You know, Kevin and I have dance schools. You know, I have a dancer experience class. It's a fitness class that I love doing, and it's great. And I mean, you get to do a show. You get to be on a show that's loved and that is very popular.
And you get to dress up,
and I get to dress up, and yeah. they put lots of beautiful makeup on me and hair.
Yeah.
and tan, even though I don't tan anymore.
Yeah,
actually,
I don't tan.
It dries my skin.
Okay. Do you mind if I do a little interview with Simon now?
Absolutely.
I'd like you to join in with us, but I've never interviewed Simon, so I think this could be quite fun.
Feel free to chip in, Kaz.
Simon.
Hi.
What did you think when you first we first worked together on something for the weekend? What did you think when I turned? You'd already got the job, hadn't you?
Yeah.
And I was a late addition to it. Someone phoned me one day and said, can you come to an office? They said, we got this show, we need a presenter, do you fancy going along and trialing? What did you think when I turned up? Did you know who I was?
Yeah, I knew who you were because I'd watched Soccer AM, as all kind of football fans had. So I liked your work. So when I sort of told my mates, I've got the show and Tim Lovejoy's going to do it, then I was genuinely looking forward to it. Because everyone sort of said, he seems like quite a cool bloke. And I knew a couple of people who knew you. So, I was kind of, knew your work, looking forward to it.
Why do you think Sunday... Why do you think Sunday brunch is such a success, Simon?
Well, Tim, it's interesting that you asked that.
Wow.
Because we did something for the weekend. for 5 years when it was me and you, originally Amanda Hamilton, then Louise Redknapp. And basically, so it was you and Louise or Amanda were presenting and I was just cooking.
Yeah.
But people seemed to like our relationship.
They did, didn't they?
Because it was, I don't know, maybe because it was real.
Yeah.
You know, we were two blokes who were clearly friends who got along well. And then Sunday brunch... I don't know. I don't know why it's a success because I feel like we're just getting away with it. You know, I love what we do. I think we do a good job. I genuinely do, but I don't know why it's such a success.
Because we enjoy it.
Maybe
a lot of TV shows people don't actually enjoy. I've worked on quite a few TV shows in my time because I was a producer as well as a presenter. And Soccer AM, when I went there, I went, right, this is only TV. It's so unimportant in the great scheme of things. Let's just have fun. And I think that's why Soccer AM is so successful. It's a group of guys just and girls, Helen and some of the other girls, messing about, just trying to have as much fun as possible. And I think people buy into it. When you watch Ant and Dec, they're just having fun. And so I think that's what people like. And I think that's what's happened with Sunday Brunch is people seem to enjoy coming down. Karen, you've been on our show. Is it fun to do?
Yeah. I mean, especially when you get to taste beer that you don't like.
Yeah. Though I really like that, though. See, I think with TV, the one of the big problems with TV, which doesn't happen on our show, is there's a level of dishonesty where everyone thinks that everything in the world is great. I always get, oh, that's the oven, Simon. What does that mean?
Oh, it means that our beef is at temperature.
Okay. So you get a... have you set that? Have you set that to do that? Or is that just...
It's set, so if it, so the internal temperature is at 70, which will give its nice medium rare.
Did you set that, though, or did it set it automatically?
Yeah.
It's done it automatically. No, I didn't. Did you?
No.
Oh.
It's a ghost.
So it's set. So my... Oh, that's brilliant. Yeah. That's good. Anyway, what were we talking about? It's so good that we're cooking a meal.
Nice to see your podcast is kind of as professional as Sunday brunches.
What were we talking about? I just don't remember. Something about
dishonesty in
the dishonesty, yeah. And so when you're trying the beer and going, I don't like it, that is not insulting to anyone in the world. I always get in trouble when I say I don't like something. People always go on social media and say, he's so rude. But it's like, you don't have to like everything. And I think it's really nice and when someone's honest.
Should we get that beef out? Should I just nip off the stool for one second and take the beef out of the oven?
I've run out of questions for Karen. Karen.
Make some questions up. Can I interview you?
What's your hobbies? Yeah, you can ask me some questions if you want.
So how would you start teaching me how to dance? Would you start with the counts, the steps?
No, basic mistake that. Dancing is all about the feeling. You've got to first get emotionally involved in the song. So I would, you've got to... the first thing you must do if you're going to learn a dance is it's very, very noisy. That looks amazing.
That looks amazing. Oh, my God. If you guys can see this.
Mark, there's the tinfoil in that. If you want. So the first thing you've got to do, Karen, is you get your piece of music. Mm-hmm. And I would listen to it for quite a long time. Just maybe 10 times over and over, and really fall in love with the piece of music. Let it seep in through your pores. And then once you've got the music actually in you and you're living the music, then you can maybe think about, less noise there, please. Then you can maybe think about interpreting that music in the form of dance.
What
then,
inspires you?
Generally, then you would think, does this music lend itself to backwards dancing, hip hop dancing, or the Charleston? And once you've worked out which one of those three disciplines,
note at this point, I've switched off now.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, backwards.
Phew,
dancing.
Simon's back. Do you want to see the backwards dancing?
No, not yet. After dinner?
No, I want to do it now. It was always set to Whitney Houston's. I used to do it on the show, and it was Soccer M back in the day. Whitney Houston's. I want to dance with somebody. Okay, you can sing along.
Does that somebody want to dance with you?
I don't really know. Is that how it goes? Yeah. Right, okay. Whatever it is. Anyway, that one. I'm going to dance. And I'd been to a lot of weddings at the time. Mark, what do you want? Are you interrupting here?
I was just asking if I should cover the meat.
He's asking if he could cover the meat.
Yeah, that's fine.
Should.
The meat and the potatoes.
That's fine. Yeah. It'll be fine.
I was noticing that men, when they get to a certain age, they dance backwards. And so,
what do you mean?
Well, I'll show you. And so I started doing it on... This is not a very good podcast, but we'll see. So I started doing it on Soccer M.
Do you like me to do some commentary while you're kind of doing it?
Well,
to
if you could see Whitney Houston, it'd be better if you could do that.
So I do this. So what's basically happening here is Tim is... literally kind of going side to side and then flicking his head backwards. I don't think that's backwards, Karen, do you?
He did take a crossover step in the front.
I threw one of those in there. I'm glad you noticed. I was feeling the music in my head. I had Whitney singing along.
Poor Volta. Oh, yeah.
What's that?
Oh, sorry, just dancing to him.
Oh, you got your bloody in jokes for Karen now, haven't you?
Hey, yeah.
Come here,
all those jokes.
He's changed. Bloody changed. Aww. He used to be my mate. Look at him now. He used to be into football and drinking. Girls. No, it's all dancing. Simon, tell us about your history. How did you get into cooking?
Into cooking?
Yes, into cooking.
So
because you took an art exam. You took art. You did. You took art, yeah? At university?
Yes.
Yes.
So I did fashion design down at university.
Yes.
And then when I was a student, I worked in bars and restaurants, always kind of front of house, like lots of people did. Then I worked for 5 years as a designer.
Yes.
And then I always felt that well, one, I wasn't a very good designer. I kind of wasn't really kind of loving it. I was competent and I was making a living, but no more than that. And then I just decided that I wanted a change of career. And a guy who I knew from Leicester ended up in Manchester, as did I. We started knocking around together, and then in a very abridged version, we decided that we'd kind of jack in what we were doing and buy a restaurant. And I then taught myself to cook 27 years ago.
You taught yourself?
Yeah.
And how did you do that? Because no YouTube back then.
Books. I think, though, also 27 years ago.
I've got to just say this, though, by the way, because we get a lot of Michelin star chefs on our show. And guys that you, God, you say a lot better than you, don't you? That's what you say. But Simon's food is always amazing because he knows how to cook food that tastes good. So some of those guys who come on who are the expert chefs cannot on TV produce a meal that tastes as good regularly as what Simon does. He his meals are always great. His food's great. So go on, you talk yourself.
So 27 years ago, I think the industry was nowhere near as sophisticated as it is now. You know, there weren't so many restaurants, and so you could get away with being just okay. But what we were kind of nice, we were friendly, we were honest, I suppose, you know, ethos for everything I do. Like, you know, what we do on telly, what I did was in Strictly. I was just honest, and if we weren't that great, you just tried to get better all the time.
And that was your vegetarian restaurant?
Yeah, it was Greens.
So why vegetarian? Was it already vegetarian?
Yeah, it was a veggie calf. And so, because we had no money, we had £4,000 between us, and we had to buy a restaurant for £42,000. And so because it was an existing business, then we managed to persuade the bank that we could make a go of it. But we just blagged it. We went in and lied to a bank. We were like, you know, we were like Del and Rodney, that this time next year we'd be millionaires.
Yeah.
And then when we actually got the restaurant, when we got the loan, and we did a proper business plan, we realised, so our plan was to be front of house. It was never to cook. We want to be front of house and kind of chat girls up. That was the reason why we bought a restaurant. And then when we discovered that we couldn't afford to employ anybody, then I ended up in the kitchen. And I fell in love with that. I fell in love with cooking really, really quickly. And because I'm quite pig-headed, then I decided I wanted to be kind of quite good. So we went from a standing start in 1990 to 1992 being described as one of the most exciting new restaurants in the UK by The Guardian. So, you know, I worked hard.
And it being vegetarian, at the time, vegetarian restaurants weren't... your dog, Betty, is she all right? Because she's walking backwards and forwards trying to find places to lie.
Aww.
Why is this?
Maybe
is she all right?
I'll let her out.
She's practicing her backward dancing.
Is she? I'm just worried about her because she's... vegetarian restaurants 25 years ago. What was it like? I mean, was it busy trade?
Well, I suppose 25 years ago, veggie restaurants were very worthy. So the general consensus of vegetarian then was it was a lifestyle as much as food, whereas we were about the food, not the lifestyle.
Right.
You know, I'm not a vegetarian, never was. So what we wanted to do was create exciting food that happened to have no meat in it, which is what we did. But I think it's a good grounding because from a creative point of view, you have to work harder to create veggie food still now that is as tasty as meat protein. You know, our piece of beef that we're roasting here, you put that in the oven, you roast some potatoes, it's done. It's much harder with an aubergine. You know, you've got to be creative to make that work.
All right, final question on this interview. I'm getting bored. I want to get back to Karen.
I thought just for once, maybe, you know, I'd get a little bit of airtime. He wouldn't just talk over. But no, it's just the same as Sunday.
What am I like to work with?
You're a really lovely, generous co-host.
Do you know what we don't do? We can never promote your stuff on our show. And yet you've got a very successful business. I'm sorry, I'm laughing at Betty. She's now on her back with her paws in her hair. This is quite an interesting dog. She's just walking. She can't find comfort. I think, is it because I've got a heated floor that she's...
Do you?
Yeah, is that
what
it is?
Oh, yes, that's what she's looking for, a place to cool off.
Oh, okay.
You're hot, you have a hot house.
Hot house, yeah. Simon, tell us about you. You've got businesses all over the place now. You've got your restaurant Greens, then you've got this whole chain of restaurants.
We've got 10 restaurants now. We've got 9 in the UK and one in Dubai. And it's changed. I mean, that's fairly recent. We've kind of set up a different business. Then we've merged with another business. And you sort of change from being someone who's chef across 3 places to being like, you know, part of the food chain of sort of 10 places. And it's exciting. It's a much nicer place. I mean, Karen, when we did some filming at one of the restaurants, you said you were quite amazed when I walked in that there was a change in both yeah. me and in every single person that was in there.
Oh, go on. How was that? What
it happened? Was amazing. He just turned into this sergeant. He walked in. And, like, the confidence level was like, I mean, he was in control of that kitchen. And everybody that, you know, once he walked in, everybody, like, just kind of, you know, started looking around and shuffling around and getting out of his way. And, it's, you know, but the control and the... I guess that you can see that obviously he was in charge. Mm. And I found that really amazing to see the change in his personality.
Now there are this interview could go on for a long time, but our beef's ready, so I'm gonna cut to the end if that's okay. I'm gonna cut to the questions we ask everybody. Is that all right?
Yeah.
Mark, can you open the wine to get us ready for this meal?
Yeah.
The corkscrews in that top drawer there under you. All right, so Karen, let's start with you. What one piece of advice would you like to give our listeners that has been, that's valuable to your life? We ask everyone who comes on our podcast these questions, by the way, so.
Well, especially in my industry or in life, actually, I think that it's really good to surround yourself with A team players, people who know their craft and who, you know, are people that can influence you and you can look up to, and sometimes that are better than you in at your job. I like being pushed, and I like learning from people, and it's one of these things that I've always had people that I look up to and that I can get advice from.
I've just thought of another question I want to ask you. How much interaction do you have with the judges?
We don't actually.
Strictly.
We don't
Never.
Really know.
Do they not come and have a chat with you and say what's happening with Simon? How's he going?
No, not before. No. I mean, they come in on Saturday mornings and we don't really get to see them. Maybe sometimes after at the you know, in the green room when we're all having drinks and getting drunk. But after that, I mean, it's usually Craig that stays around and is a bit, you know, more. It's one of the nicer ones. I mean, they're all nice, but he stays around and chats with everybody.
I've never known.
And actually Shirley as well. She stays around now as well. And I think she's doing great, by the way.
I've never known anyone open a bottle of wine so noisily as Mark's doing over there. Simon, you never got to hang out after the shows, did you? You had to come home.
I would have like a quick drink because I've had sort of, you know, yeah. friends and family down and that would be it. But it just feels a bit like you're leaving a party.
Is it quite wild, Karen, every Saturday night?
No, I mean, it's crazy when you go in there because obviously, you know, I mean, for me specifically, I'd rather go home right away because, I mean, I've been, sometimes you get there at 7 a.m. and you don't finish till 10, right. 10:30. And then when you go into the green room, I mean, it's great. And, you know, you have your friends and you have fans in there, but it can be very exhausting because all you want to do is get a drink and then everybody's trying to take a picture or you know, which is lovely and you want to do, but literally all I want is a gin and tonic. And sit in the corner and rock back wow. and forth.
That could actually be your mantra for yes, life.
That's the advice. Just take gin and tonic.
We're giving you red wine instead yes. today. Simon, what's one piece of advice that you...
I mean, you've heard me say this before. This is a piece of advice my dad gave me when I first started employing people, but I think it works for life full stop, is always give people around you the opportunity to succeed rather than the opportunity to fail.
Ooh, and what does that mean?
So basically, you sort of think, say, apply it with your kids or with... From a work point of view, then what we try and do is, so if I take on a new chef, for example, then it's very easy to sort of be critical of somebody in the workplace. No, that's rubbish, you're not doing that right. And it doesn't mean that you don't need to teach people and to be critical of them, but making sure that within that you have a framework where they can succeed and get better. And I think it's true, we tend to do it with our kids. You know, you want your kids to do as well as they can, but you also want them to have good parameters. So I think it's just about being positive when needed to be, and knowing whether it's arm around the shoulder, kick up the backside, or something else.
Okay. Karen, what mistake do people make maybe doing your job?
They listen to what other people have to say too much.
Ooh, I like that one.
And instead of just kind of going with their gut instinct and just sticking with it, I think it's very easy to, you know, get down on a lot of things in our industry and in life, actually. But I tend to turn a blind eye on certain things. I mean, there are obviously in our industry, there's a lot of things that can hurt you, But you know, you just have to stay resilient. And
there must be a lot of jealousy in your world, because there's only I don't know how many pro dancers are on there in that show. 20?
There's 15. There's 15. It's actually 17 of us. Seventeen. I don't know.
17 pro dancers, and the country's full of them. Yeah. And they obviously.
Yeah, I mean, it is very, very competitive. But you know, one of the things that that is best about this year, this series with everybody, is that everybody's is a unit. And yeah, sometimes you don't get along here and there, but you do stay as united as possible. There was thing on the news that on the paper that some of the girls weren't getting along, and you know what, it's a lie. It's one of those things that we are actually supporting each other all the time, and because that's what you have to do when you're a team.
Great news, though. I mean, like, if you're a journalist, you can pretty much have a good guess at that, couldn't you?
Yeah.
I mean, listen,
there's a load of girls there.
They're all jealous.
There's a bit of arguing going on.
Oh, she's too sexy. I'm jealous of her. No, it's not like that.
Yeah. Simon, mistake people make?
Thinking they know everything. I think you should never be content with the knowledge that you have. In any kind of walk of life, you sort of think, you know what, I know this. I know how to present, cook, dance, whatever it might be, or I know the best way to get from A to B. I think you should always keep your mind open to new inputs and new opinions. Why are you looking blankly at me?
I just think he went present, dance, cook, and I'm wondering whether you're putting yourself in two categories there, or where are you going with that? What are you best at? Presenting or cooking? What would you say you're best at? And then I'll tell you the answer afterwards.
I don't know. I actually have a very a relatively low opinion of myself. I don't think I'm particularly brilliant at anything.
Really? No.
Yeah.
I don't believe that. You're a confident chap. Yeah. No.
I'm plagued with self-doubt.
Are you?
Yeah.
Really?
Seriously. It's a whole other podcast.
Yeah, I do, yeah.
Self-worth, the next podcast.
Yeah, I'm wondering whether we should stop and get involved in that. Right, let's get into life hacks. Any life hacks, Karen?
Coconut oil.
Coconut oil.
Yes, you
Why?
Can use it as moisturizer. You can use it as cooking. You can use it for your hair.
We all brightened
you can use it
then,
to do
we?
Coconut oil. I think it's like the fountain of youth is in coconut oil.
Do you believe that?
I love it. You do this thing called oil pulling, and that you put a little spoon in your mouth, and then you kind of let it melt in your mouth, and then you kind of swivel it around in your mouth for about 20 minutes, and then apparently it pulls all the toxins and all the bacteria that's stored in your mouth, and then
says who?
Says the magazines.
Says the coconut oil marketing campaign.
And actually, it's really good for your gums and your teeth. Your skin. I mean, obviously, you can't swallow it.
Must be tooth decay. Well, you can't swallow it.
No, I mean, you can't swallow it after you've done all that gurgling stuff in your mouth. You have to throw it out, and because it's very toxic.
Because of the stuff that is...
Yes.
Okay.
Interesting.
I like a bit of dental hygiene. Maybe I'll give that a go. Simon, life hacks.
Mine's a really important one. It's about packing.
That's great. I was expecting cooking and I'm getting packing.
Awful lot of my life in hotels and on planes, trains and automobiles. So here's the thing. If you're going on a journey where it's not just an overnight, lay out everything that you're going to take with you into compartments. So you have your underwear, you'll have your kind of your top half of your body outfits, bottom half of your body outfits, and then your footwear. And to be economical with your packing is to then remove minimum of one item from each of those piles, because you will always overpack. And if you do that, you'll be far more efficient. Then you'll get to the point, each time you do it, you'll start with less, and every time you'll take less, and you'll become a very efficient traveler.
So what do you end up with? Just one pair of pants and all?
Not necessarily, but you then sort of go, listen, I'm going to wait for 4 days. Do I really need three pairs of trousers?
Yes.
My friend, you do pack.
Absolutely,
you
like five pairs of shoes. I never know how I'm going to feel.
Do you like clothes?
No, I like just having options.
Right.
That's it.
There is something nice about options, but there's also something nice about not having options as well. A friend of mine, she went on holiday and with a couple of girls, friends, and they said to this guy, do you want to come? And he went, yeah. He turned up at the airport with a pair of shorts, swim shorts, a couple of pairs of underpants and two t-shirts. That was it. And they said they were sort of so jealous because he'd never had to think about what he was wearing. He apparently bought a couple of t-shirts when he was out there, but that was it. He just turned up, and obviously a wash kit. And he turned up with a plastic bag as well. And I just thought, oh, that's great for him. I did your life hack. I did your life hack. Okay. Final questions. Karen, what's it like to be famous?
Well, I don't think of myself as famous. I'm just, I don't know. It's not, it's not, I'm, I, 1. You know what
8
I think?
Million people are
no,
watching
but,
you.
No, but you know, no, but it's like, I can easily go outside and be completely
I'll be
anonymous.
Honest with you, right? That your celebrity is Simon, and then there's you. When you're dancing, the focus was not always on Simon as you're dancing.
What?
What? Really? No, I mean, I think again, it's one of these things that if you think you're famous, then it goes to your head. And I think that I like staying grounded, and I love my job, and I love inspiring people and seeing it.
Yeah, but what's it like?
It's,
you are famous.
It's awesome. You got it. Okay, there it is. I love it.
Simon, what's it like being famous?
Being famous opens doors that you never dreamed you'd be able to open and go behind. For example, when we were doing Strictly and we filmed at Anfield, we got to walk down the tunnel, touch the live bird and walk onto the pitch at 8 o'clock in the morning when nobody else was there. That's what being
famous
does. Were
you there, Karen?
Does.
Yes, I was. And
what did
I
you
had
think?
No, and I didn't think anything.
No.
You were actually saying, is there any coffee? You
yes.
You were saying, is
I mean,
there
it, didn't mean to, it didn't mean to.
I'm having a moment. She's going,
yes,
is there
I'm
any coffee?
Sorry. I recorded you.
Yeah, you did.
It's interesting. Fame. Someone once said to me, "It gives you the keys to the world, so you can 1 minute. If you're famous, you can go and meet a politician, and then you can go and hang out in a drug den if you want. You can do whatever you want. It gives you that. The more famous you are, the more you can do. But it gives you the keys to the world, which I don't know if that's strictly true, but
I think that's really dangerous, actually, because
it
gives you too many options and too many things. It gives you too much freedom. I think I like having a being in a little bit of a box that I can, there's certain things that I like to do, certain things that I know I can't do.
I just never would hit the point where I didn't appreciate the doors that...
Oh, hold on. All right, I've got a... Go on, Karen.
No, go ahead.
I've got a good question for you then, Simon, because when you're on Sunday Brunch, we're not very famous. We're like, people recognise us and go, hi. When you go to Strictly, your fame goes up a level, doesn't it? So you're now, you're like, I think you're probably famous enough to do Panto now.
Oh no, I'm not.
Oh yes, you are. Behind you, your career is behind you. No, so what was it like suddenly going, I remember being out with you not so long ago and people were asking, paparazzi were taking your picture.
It's very weird. And when I started Strictly, my agent said to me, what happens with Strictly is when you're in it, then you are kind of famous, but as soon as it ends, you go back to being what you were with maybe a 10% more. And I think that's exactly what's happened. You know, you'd sort of, when you're in it, you couldn't walk down the street without people wanting to kind of like, you know, take your picture, ask how it's going, blah, 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 blah. Now, miles of people go, oh yeah, how was Strictly?
Do you know what? It's changed for me as well. I can't go anywhere without people talking to me about bloody Strictly. I'm not even in it and I'm talking, I like, they're talking to me non-stop about you and it just doesn't stop, and I just get inundated with people asking me for tickets and people want tickets to that show so badly. I'm like, I'm not in it, it's my, you know, it's my co-presenter is in it, it's not me.
Did 3 million people apply for tickets for Strictly?
Is it really?
3 million people.
That's ridiculous.
Oh, I didn't give my tickets away last weekend. Oops.
Oh, no, you've got to do that. So you went up to a new bit of fame. Was it enjoyable when you were up there?
Yeah, it was lovely. I think, you know, I was sort of said that when I was in it, that I was the closest thing probably to your average bloke in the street doing it. You know, everybody else that's in it was, you know, more famous, had a proper sort of showbiz life, and I don't. So it was very nice that, you know, I think I very much the average person in the street related to what I was doing. So yeah, it was lovely. It was really, really nice.
Right,
but she's invisible. Right,
what do you mean she's
thing.
Invisible?
You can't see me. Can you see me?
No.
She's honestly invisible. We travel up and down from Manchester to London all the time. And she'd be sitting opposite me and people stop at the train and go, hey, how's Strictly going? Yeah, fine, yeah. How are you getting on with how are you getting on with your dance partner? I think, she's there. She can be invisible. It's quite amazing.
Well, how?
She just kind of sits with a baseball cap on and her head down. and then just changes her whole body language so you don't think it's Karen.
You know, when I'm sitting on a tube sometimes, I think that when these people try and take pictures of me, I hate that. It's like they sit there and you just see them angling their phone and try and take a picture. And then every now and then they haven't got their sound turned off. So you can hear the shutter go, you know, that sort of thing. Like, why are you doing that? It's just such a strange thing to do. But I always think, what are they going to do with that picture? Tim was on a train. Yes, yeah, so what? Right, final question. I do love your company, but I'm starving and I want to eat that beef. So final question of the day. Karen, start with you. What is the meaning of life?
Oh my God. I just want to eat some beef. Can I get back to you on that one, in a couple of months?
No, you meaning can get, I'll tell you what, you can get back to me in a minute. Simon, okay. What's the meaning of life?
The meaning of life is wake up in the morning and look forward to the day ahead and be surrounded by good friends, have good company, have a roof over your head, have clothes to wear, things to feed, and something to look forward to at all times.
I'm not joining your religion. That's bullshit. It's
like there's nothing. Listen, you've just thrown this one at me.
I know, but eternal life. Give me something exciting to go on. I like it. I like it. That's good. That's good. I like that.
What's yours?
I'm not telling you that. I mean, I'm the interviewer. I've not thought this through the question.
Otherwise, you end up being facetious, don't you? The meaning of life is kind of Albert Camus' entire work.
Is it survival and procreation?
But is that the meaning of life? Is that just the function of life?
Yeah.
Wow.
We're in a simulation anyway, so. Karen, have you got an answer yet?
Yes. Meaning of life. It's...
Feel the music.
Well, for me, being happy. Like being happy with myself, being happy with the people that are around me. And I don't know, I guess within my life, I don't feel like, I've gone through a lot of stuff in my life and we'll get through this in another time. But I just feel like literally you can have success and you can have a lot of things in your life, but if you're not happy, then you might as well not have anything.
Mm. My dad always reckons that the meaning of life is to make small, unimportant events big and important so that everything seems fun.
Oh,
so when
good.
We were kids, he'd always do things like, you know, whether it was kind of taking the bins out or kind of washing the car, then it would be, he would make it an adventure.
Let's put some music on, we're taking the bins out!
You know what I mean? He would generally do that. And I do think that's kind of, I think it's just a very positive attitude to life.
How is your injury, by the way?
It's all right now,
you're
fine.
Strictly injury.
Yeah, I'm back boxing. Yeah.
Are you? He's back boxing. You're going to fight Philip Schofield soon. You so are. because people know that you got you struggled halfway through after your Charleston? Do they sort of know?
No, we weren't allowed to talk about it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We were allowed to say that I had an injury, but you couldn't go into specifics. Yeah, because I was told I shouldn't have danced.
Okay.
Yeah.
I told you shouldn't have danced.
Yeah, you did. Yeah. But I didn't. They offered me a bye, and they sort of said I could have kind of, you know, missed that week and then come back in the week after. But I didn't want to do it. You know, I felt like I would cheat somebody else out of their place and not put myself down. But, you know, I had a finite lifespan and I felt like, you know what, if I could actually do it, then so be it. And as it turned out, I loved that dance. That final dance, I really, really loved. I mean, that Tuesday afternoon when I said to Karen, come on, let's do this. So we only had Wednesday and Thursday.
Chicken eating.
She really wasn't happy.
Really?
I mean, because, you know, it puts a lot of stress on me because obviously he had about 6 hours to learn the whole dance. Because we had to do VTs, we had to do other things.
Right.
So it put a lot of stress on the choreography and what I could do with him. And so he can still look like he was able to, you know, obviously. And it was a Venus waltz, so you have to use the gliding and you have to use your legs. And it was your right leg, right?
Yeah.
And he couldn't really use his quad to push into anything. So it was very difficult. And a lot of people obviously were like, oh, it was... You know, oh, this routine was this. And I'm like, well, you don't know the struggle that we had to go through to put this routine together and actually make it look like we were just having fun and effortless.
I put Karen in a situation that was unfair on Karen, I think, on that. And I apologized to Karen.
I accept the apology.
Yeah, I did. You know, I really, really did. Because, you know,
we
end up doing a routine that really I wasn't fit enough to kind of do that routine. And I love that routine. And, you know, I'm dead proud of that. But I'm more kind of proud of what you managed to kind of get us to do. And we learned that routine in an afternoon.
Yeah, well, 2 hours.
Yeah. And she was... Now, when she's talking about being a Rottweiler, oh my word.
Oh,
you know, when you walk into a room, when you were a kid, you walk into a room and your mum was in a bad mood and you could cut the atmosphere with a knife. It was that.
Oh, people already think I'm mean. No, I'm a really
Simon,
nice
is
person.
Nice? Is she nice?
Yeah.
You, nice person. You, yeah. Is she a nice person?
Yeah, she's lovely. Okay. She is genuinely a lovely human being.
I've got... I want to ask you about one other thing, but I'm bit, kind of the beef's there. I'll ask you, but don't go on too long. Okay. Because the really cute bit I thought about Simon was the first time I came down to watch him dance was You'll Never Walk Alone, second dance. And you mucked up at the end.
Yeah.
And you were absolutely mortified. And I thought what was so sweet about him, you weren't there at the time, Karen, he went, I really hope I get in the dance off because I want to do it again because I can do it properly and I want to do it properly. And I thought that was so wonderful that you actually wanted to prove that you could actually do it. That's the time I went to say it on the show. Do you remember?
Yeah, yeah.
And then I was like, can't give away what happens. Can't give away what happens. But you you didn't do the dance off with that one, did you?
No, we kind of we did 3 dance offs out of 5 dances.
Karen has just spat her water out.
It's got to be said, I am top of the dance-off leaderboard. And I think only Molly King can equal me.
Oh.
So I think I am actually going to win the dance-off leaderboard. Which that's the important one, Strictly, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm hungry.
Listen, thanks so much for doing the interview for us. And how can people follow you? We always do that on the podcast. Let's start with you, Karen.
On Twitter is Karen _ Hauer, H-A-U-E-R. And on Instagram is Karen Clifton Official.
And where are your shows happening?
What?
Where are your shows happening?
Tour. Oh, our tour. Our tour is in, it's around the country. It starts in May and it ends in July.
And if you want to buy tickets to that, where do you go?
Karen, Kevin and Karen Dance Live.
Okay. And your dance school you have, where's that?
Well, it's called Cake for Karen and Kevin. We have one in Chiswick, one in Wimbledon and one in Putney.
Is that for can I join? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. You can go to...
Please do. Please do. Let me come and watch.
Oh, I can't wait to see this. Do the backwards dancing.
Yeah. I'll come and teach you that. Can I come and teach?
You can.
Hip-hop dancing.
Absolutely.
Simon, we all know where we can follow you.
Twitter, @ Simon Rim. Instagram, @ Rim of Simon. And then... restaurants, there are millions of them. So, you Google me in restaurants, you'll find them.
Just go in and say, I kind of listen to his podcast. You get 10% discount on all of them. You don't really. Listen, thanks, everyone. Well, let's go and eat this beef, shall we?
Woohoo!
Well, I bought you that beef stock stuff.
I'll actually cobble a bit.
Like, I bought you that beef stock there. It's posh stuff.
Yeah, I'll cobble a bit together.
Mark. Okay. Good. Did you enjoy that? Simon's knocking up some gravy.
I loved
Karen's,
it. Karen's texting or tweeting or something.
Tweeting.
Just being interviewed on a podcast by a complete idiot.
What do you think of that one?
That was great. I enjoyed that very much. That was...
Karen's grabbed the wine.
It's still very lively in here, isn't it?
It is very lively.
It's like doing it. It's like being at the chef's table.
I wonder if we should do more podcasts whilst we make dinner.
Well, let's see how this one sounds first, shall we?
Or we could just get Simon round every week to make some dinner. Where are you going to put that?
He's not busy on a Sunday, is he, Tim?
He just keeps making a mess in the kitchen. This is what I'm worried about here, is the idea. What are you going to do with that stuff now? Oh, he's making gravy. Look at that.
So this is great because this will all end up in the Daily Express because everything that you two do does, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Simon Rimmer ties up his shoelaces. It's ridiculous, isn't it?
No. Simon Rimmer was throwing knives around the studio not so long ago. And so after that, we made the news every week. So, Mark, that was good. I enjoyed that. Did you?
I did very much so.
What did you learn?
Flour,
hold on, Mark.
Self-raising or plain?
Podcast gold, this bit.
Do you know what, though? I could maybe talk through how he's making his gravy. He's got the meat juices in, he's using a bit of stock, he's getting the gravy going. What are you looking for now? Wooden spoons in the top drawer there next to Karen. So that's it for this week's podcast.
Yep.
I hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back soon. We don't know which one.
Don't press any buttons, Karen.
Karen's looking at them.
It's all on a knife edge.
should we finish this now?
Yeah, that's it.
If you want to follow, if you want to talk to us, let us know what you think. @ Tim Lovejoy is my Twitter address. Tim, dearlovejoypodcast @ gmail.com is our email address. You can subscribe, you can follow us, you can rate us.
Yes.
Please give us 5 stars. We'll see you all next time. So we'll leave you now.
No, you're not doing it again. You can't do it in front of people. It's embarrassing.
I am. See you next time. Peace and love, Joy.
Bye.